From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Congresswoman Lois Frankel, a Democrat from the Sunshine State of Florida. She represents Florida's 22nd district, which is home to former President Donald Trump. Lois Frankel sits on the powerful House Appropriations Committee, where she serves on the State Foreign Operations Subcommittee and the Subcommittee on Labor, Health, Human Services, and Education. Prior to her approximately 10-year congressional tenure, Lois Frankel served as mayor of West Palm Beach from 2003 to 2011. Her website bio goes on to say that she also served in the Florida State Legislature, where she became a leading force to improve the economic condition of families and seniors and to protect women's reproductive freedom. Frankel continues those fights today in Congress as chair of the Democratic Women's Caucus. She is also co-chair of the Women, Peace, and Security Caucus. On the issue of guns, Congresswoman Frankel supports common sense gun control measures, such as a ban on high-capacity magazines and universal background checks. She is a staunch advocate for women's reproductive freedom and has condemned recent attempts to ban medication abortions in the United States. We'll talk with Congresswoman Frankel about numerous foreign and domestic challenges facing the country, including ramifications of policies that affect women here and abroad, such as the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the Taliban takeover in Afghanistan, and Iran's crackdown on women, and much more. We are delighted to welcome Congresswoman Lois Frankel to Press Conference USA. She joins us via Zoom. Welcome to the program.
So good to be with you today.
First, Congresswoman, why don't you tell us a bit about what motivated you to dedicate your life basically to public service, whether in the state of Florida or now in the House of Representatives?
Well, I'll go way back when I was in college in the 60s, and I call myself a student protester. I've always found myself protesting, whether it's civil rights or the Vietnam War or women's rights, environmental issues. And when I got to the end of my college career, I basically said to myself, let somebody protest me one day. I'm going to get involved in making the laws. And that really took me on the path to law school and eventually into public service. But I would say probably the biggest motivating factors in my life have been my family, especially my son, wanting him to have every opportunity to be a success in life and understanding that the children around him that he grew up with also needed opportunities. And now I feel the same way about my grandchildren. So I would just say that probably today, far away from the 60s, it really is making sure that our families are safe, our children have opportunities. And today, with women's rights under its severe attack, and making sure that women have the opportunities for them to have a long, fulfilling lives.
Thank you. And before we get into some of the very actions that are undermining women's rights, let me ask you a quick question again about your district. How would you describe the demographics of your constituents and the overall district because of the changing borders over the past several years?
Well, I like to tell people I live in terms of weather, it's paradise. It's a very beautiful place to live in South Florida. In terms of politics, it's becoming a horror show. But the people are good people. Mostly in my district, it's a lot of retirees, many from the Northeast. But even more and more, we have a broad section of folks, all races, religions, ethnicities, and lots of new young families, too.
And I would be remiss, Congresswoman Frankel, if I didn't mention the fact that your district is home to one of a rather well-known or notorious constituent, depending on one's views, former President Donald Trump, who I don't assume voted for you. But you did vote to impeach him twice. Just a quick question before we get into other matters. Do you support the various investigations, both federal and state, seeking accountability for his alleged crimes?
Well, I believe in the rule of law, and I believe that no person is above the law. And I'll leave it at that. I think, obviously, those investigations and what's happening in the judiciary has to be kept separate from what I'm doing in Congress. And so I leave it at that.
Fair enough. Now let's turn to reproductive health care and abortion rights, which, as you alluded to, are really under attack in America, especially since the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision last year overturned Roe versus Wade that gave women the right to abortion nationwide. Now, you have been a staunch advocate to reinstate a woman's right to choose nationwide. And now we need to mention that abortion care is inaccessible in 14 states. We're seeing Republican lawmakers and now conservative judges pushing for new laws to criminalize abortion. The latest attempt, as you know, was by a Texas federal judge to block access to mifepristone. That's a safe and effective form of medication abortion, which is widely used in America. It was approved by the FDA, that is our Food and Drug Administration, for now more than 20 years. Congresswoman Frankel, how dangerous is this moment in your view? Some critics are arguing that judges and anti-abortion activists are trying to use a little-known law from the 19th century known as the Comstock Act to literally seek a nationwide ban on all abortions.
How do I describe this? It's a horror show for the women of this country right now. There's no question in my mind that right-wing MAGA Republicans are trying to ban abortion everywhere. And no better example than my own home state of Florida, which the legislature just passed a 6-week abortion ban, which in effect is a complete abortion ban because most women don't know they're pregnant past 6 weeks. And what's happened with Florida is once that law goes into effect, and it has not gone into effect yet. So right now we have a 15-week abortion ban. But once that goes, and if that goes into effect, it's going to cut off access to abortion in the South part of our country. Because if you take a look at what's going on in the South, state after state is either banning abortion or severely restricting it. And let me just start with a very important concept here, which is this. Women, not politicians, should be able to make their own personal, very important private decision about whether, when, and if they're going to grow their families. And this is what's being threatened right now. And so many implications when that ability to be in charge of your own reproductive freedom, when that's taken away, it has so many both social and economic implications to women and to their families.
Indeed. And so what do you think can be done at the federal and state level now to forestall this effort to literally ban abortion nationwide?
Well, I'm one of the prime sponsors of a bill called the Women's Health Protection Act. And that piece of legislation, which actually passed in the House when the Democrats were in control last cycle, but unfortunately didn't get a hearing in the Senate, that piece of legislation would basically put into law Roe v. Wade. It would nullify any attempt by the state governments or federal governments or judges to put into place outright abortion bans or restrictions that were unreasonable and had no real medical effects.
Exactly. And talk a bit about this comprehensive legislation, which you have co-sponsored and which safeguards abortion rights and personal decision-making in the wake of that overturning of Roe v. Wade. And what is the likelihood of its passage into law?
Well, when the Democrats were in charge of the House last cycle, so that would just be a few months ago, we were able to pass it. We passed it. I think we passed it twice. The Senate has archaic rules that require 60 votes to pass most legislation. And so although there was an attempt to try to waive that rule, that was not done. And so even when the Democrats had a slight majority, a Democratic majority in the Senate, that bill was not taken up. We do have probably, I think, over 200 sponsors of that piece of legislation here in the House. But with the Republicans in charge, what we are seeing is just the opposite. They're not going to take up the Women's Health Protection Act. Instead, one of their first, I think their first bill of the session was to basically outright ban abortion across the country. So I would say unless and until Democrats are in charge, back in charge of the House and the Senate and the presidency, that bill is going to be stalled.
Okay, well, That sounds like it's about all about elections and getting more Democrats elected to Congress and maintaining the White House, which we'll get into in a bit. But just very quickly, Congresswoman Frankel, the Texas judge that wanted to ban mifepristone, even though the FDA, our Food and Drug Administration, approved the drug, some people are saying that this is concerning not just with respect to that particular medication, abortion, but with respect to the very legitimacy of the FDA, that a judge could do that and then call into question other FDA-approved medications. Are you worried about that precedent being set?
Well, simple answer to that is yes. I mean, it's hard to believe that a judge, one judge from Amarillo, Texas, who was sought out specifically by right-wing extremist groups to bring this case, that this one person, this one judge from Amarillo, Texas, can put in jeopardy the life, livelihoods of the women of this country. And not only that, as you mentioned, by prohibiting the use of the abortion pill, which is what we're talking about, it also sets a precedent to allow anyone to challenge any FDA-approved drug and get any judge on a whim to declare the process illegal.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you are listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our special guest is Congresswoman Lois Frankel, a Democrat from the state of Florida. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal listener and Facebook fan, Tamara Udina from Ukraine. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. And before we get back to our special guest, Lois Frankel, a Democratic congresswoman from the state of Florida, let me remind you about our weekend program, Encounter. We will be talking about the reasons for the epidemic of gun violence in America and why it is so difficult to pass gun safety legislation. After numerous consecutive mass shootings from Tennessee to Kentucky to Alabama, it does appear that gun rights advocates are even more dug in than ever. But proponents of gun safety legislation are equally motivated. Next on Encounter, we get two very different views regarding the gun debate in America. So please tune in to Encounter. And now back to our guest, Lois Frankel, Democratic Congresswoman from the state of Florida. So, Lois Frankel, let's now turn to another issue that's near and dear to your heart is education. And now we're witnessing that House of Representative Republicans just passed something called H.R. 5, the so-called Parents' Bill of Rights. Could you talk about what this is and why you oppose it?
Well, I call it sort of, it's a fake attempt to basically, I think, abuse parents' rights and really putting politics over children. First of all, something that I think most common sense people can agree is that we want parents to be involved in their children's education. It's absolutely something that is a good thing for children. But it should not be done by way of, for example, banning books or threatening public education, all of which the Republicans now are trying to do. And I'll give an example. In my own home state of Florida, they passed a similar bill under the guise of Parents' Bill of Rights, which makes it a felony. That's 5 years in prison if a teacher puts the quote-unquote wrong book on the table in front of a child. Let me tell you some of the books that have been removed so far. Biography of Roberta Clemente, The Diary of Anne Frank, a biography of Rosa Parks, and I could go on and on. In Broward County, Florida, which is the home of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews, one parent objected to a book on the Holocaust. As a result, that book was removed. Now, so what's happening now? It's one parent's whim or one parent's bias that's taking precedence over the majority of other parents and teachers and putting teachers in jeopardy of, and librarians in jeopardy of going to prison if they put the wrong book on the table. So this is scary because this is a trend across the country in Republican-led legislatures.
Yes, and Congresswoman Frankel, speaking of scary, we would like to now turn to the gun safety legislation. You know, ironically, even though there is no contradiction between being a responsible gun owner and safety legislation, it does appear that similar to what you just described with regard to book banning and banning of the ability to access abortion, it appears that guns advocacy groups like the NRA, National Rifle Association, which just held its annual convention, are opposing common sense legislation, advocating that teachers be armed, for example. What is your reaction to this, and why these impediments, in your view, to just safe measures? Why are these groups opposing safe measures that does not really prohibit people from buying guns, but rather just following common sense safety regulations?
Well, the number one cause of death of children in the United States of America are guns, either guns where children are actually are gunned down or murdered, or where they commit suicide. Number one, the NRA and the Republicans are joined at the hip. It's about power and money. It's putting the NRA over our children. That's basically what it is. And the NRA has a lot of political power because they spend a lot of money on candidates who support their issues. That's really what it boils down to. And it's the majority of people in this country, if you even looked at the polling, the majority of people in this country want more gun safety laws, especially I want to get these assault weapons off the streets. My son, Ben, was an artillery officer in the Marines. He will be the first one to tell you that those kinds of military-type weapons do not belong on our streets. And yet, we're seeing mass murder after mass murder in this country. I mean, no, there was one the day before yesterday, and I'll hold my breath, probably not too long, because there's going to be another one any day now. So we did have a little sunlight on this because there was a bipartisan bill passed last session where we did make some headway on gun safety with red flag laws and trying to keep the guns out of the hands of our juveniles. But and we take a state like Florida. In one session, what have they just done? They just passed an open carry law that allows anybody who has a gun to carry it without any kind of permit.
It's hard to believe. It's hard for many Americans, but particularly our international audience is, I think, scratching their head. But as President Biden has said, he has done just about as much as he can with executive orders and this bipartisan legislation, which was extraordinary, but still not enough in many people's views. So it's going to take the Congress, as he has said, which is also a challenge.
What I'm going to say is, instead of banning books, let's ban assault weapons. I think that's something that the overwhelming majority of people in our country would support.
We shall see. But for the meantime, go ahead.
Instead of banning abortion and books, I should say, we need to ban assault weapons.
Fair enough. So, Congresswoman Frankel, another topic and issue very dear to your heart, of course, that includes women's rights, has to do with the fact that you are the co-chair of the Bipartisan Women, Peace, and Security Caucus, and you are very supportive of women in conflict who are subject to the consequences, for example, of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Ukrainian women, women in Afghanistan, women in Iran. Talk about the work of this caucus and its purpose.
Well, it's very interesting how this caucus really gave birth, if I may use those terms. I had a bill called Keeping Girls in School, which really is an effort aimed at removing obstacles that young girls face all over the world, preventing them from going to school. And it could be schools too far away from their villages and they're very unsafe conditions. It could be not having toilets. It could be, obviously, child marriage, genital mutilation, discrimination. many, many factors that are keeping literally hundreds of millions of girls in the countries around the world out of school. COVID was very harmful to both boys and girls around the world. And literally hundreds of millions are now out of school. Think about it. Think about what that means in terms of a lost generation and the peacefulness of, and prosperity of countries. So getting back to the Women, Peace, and Security, to our bipartisan caucus, when I was arguing keep girls in school, I saw a Republican member of Congress. I didn't know him very well. I knew he was from Florida. He got up and very articulately talked about how in his military service, how obviously it was to him that where girls were being kept out of school, there was much more conflict. And that was Mike Waltz. And he happened to have brought his daughter to the chamber with him that day. And anyway, we got together and talked and decided that we would create a caucus that would focus on those kinds of issues, of women, peace, and security issues. Of course, there are many, education being some of them, others being, for example, getting women involved in peace negotiations. Research has shown that when women are involved in peace negotiations, the peace lasts longer. Making sure that women who are in security forces are treated fairly, that they have the proper, for example, armor and tools to keep themselves safe. So lots of different issues that we are currently addressing. And sadly, there's a lot of conflict in this world that is especially harming women, whether rape is a tool of war, women having to take on new responsibilities because so many men, for example, in Ukraine are at war. Are you taking a look at the young girls in Afghanistan who basically have been banished to their homes and out of school because of the Taliban?
Absolutely, no question. And the fact that Republican Michael Waltz is co-chairing this caucus with you is at least a ray of light for bipartisan support for a very important issue. And of course, you mentioned Afghanistan. What is the caucus doing with regard to trying to get, you know, the Taliban? Of course, it's a major issue and we need allies around the world to stop this repression of women in that country.
Oh, it is a very, very difficult issue. I was at a committee meeting today with Samantha Powers, who runs our USAID. We talked about the really the dilemma of women around the world, and especially in Afghanistan. It's a tough issue because, you know, do you give money? Can you give money to the Taliban for humanitarian purposes when you know that it will probably be disregarded? But there are organizations, a Voice of America, Internet, any type of Internet activity, NGO activity that still exists where we could get a link into the homes where especially girls are forced to stay now to help them with their education. I mean, that's really the kinds of things that we have to look for.
Indeed, there are a lot of on-the-ground efforts, local efforts that involve men, I found out, particularly in Afghanistan, and they're working around this until such time as a policy change can occur in that country with the Taliban. And there are even rifts within the Taliban, some who are opposed to the banning, but then they have the very conservative elite that runs the organization from Kandahar. So it's a major internal battle. But it's good to know that the U.S. government, that is through your caucus in particular, you know, is fighting for ways to combat these types of oppression of women and girls. And as we close, Congresswoman, just a quick question with regard to 2024. How would you assess the Biden administration's accomplishments thus far and prospects for winning the White House, Biden, should he run again?
Well, I think history is going to show that Joe Biden, in his first 2 years of presidency, when Democrats had control of the Congress, that they were remarkable. He was able to, I'll say we beat COVID. I might say we got rid of COVID, but we got shots into people's arms, got children back to school. We saved thousands and thousands of businesses and got the economic ability for people to stay alive and well till they could get back to work. And then we passed the biggest infrastructure bill in probably a century, could help us modernize our transportation, our roads and bridges, our water infrastructure. And as important to make sure that we have internet connection in all parts of our country. And then the Inflation Reduction Act, an historic effort to reduce carbon in our atmosphere and to help people stay on their health insurance. And we learned a tough lesson with COVID when our manufacturing that we were depending on things like chips being manufactured overseas, we're going to bring some of that here to the United States. So Joe Biden has had a remarkable 2 years. He today issued a new executive order on the care economy, and he has stood up tall for women's right to be in charge of their own very personal decision of when and if to bring a child into the world.
Yes, indeed. That's quite a list of accomplishments. A number of others, other lawmakers like yourself have mentioned. So we shall see. And may I ask you, Congresswoman, will you be seeking re-election?
Yes, I am planning to seek re-election.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time to speak with us. Congresswoman Lois Frankel is a Democrat from the Sunshine State of Florida. She sits on the House Appropriations Committee. Once again, Congresswoman, thanks so much for your time and terrific insights on so many issues. We greatly appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
And before we close...
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Democracies are strengthened by the participation of all citizens, particularly women and girls in all their diversity. That's why President Joe Biden has made advancing women's and girls' civic and political participation a top priority of his administration. Speaking at the Status of Women is the Status of Democracy event on day zero of the Second Summit for Democracy, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said, "We all know the rights of women in many parts of the world are under threat and under attack.
Repressive governments are passing targeted laws to restrict women's fundamental freedoms, including the right to free speech and assembly. Extremist actors are disproportionately targeting women and girls, especially those from historically marginalized identities, like LGBTQIS people, women from racial, ethnic, and religious communities."
But it's not just in autocracies that women are being denied their full and equal rights, noted Secretary Blinken.
In far too many parts of the world, women and girls still do not have equal opportunities to study and work. Women journalists, advocates, politicians, and others are subject to persistent online harassment and abuse. Women who are victims of violence often do not have equal access to justice. Women are subject to discrimination that often puts them at a disadvantage.
In the face of these forces, women and girls are leading the charge to advocate for their own rights and all human rights and democracy around the world. And they're demonstrating the importance of having women and girls at the decision-making table. In Afghanistan, in the face of the Taliban's relentless efforts to erase them from daily life, women are protesting for the respect of their human rights. They are still fighting for a brighter future for their country. In Iran, courageous women are marching in the streets, under great threat to themselves, to call for woman, life, and freedom. The United States stands in solidarity with these women and all who are working for women and girls' full, free, and equal participation in decision-making processes around the world. Through our diplomacy, said Secretary Blinken, we're committed to supporting them and advancing gender equality worldwide. When we succeed, he said, we not only do the right thing, but the smart and necessary thing to make our countries more prosperous, secure, and fuller of opportunity for all of our people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Please join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.